Okay, so I'd like to thank especially the couple of people I've bumped into over the last few weeks who said, oh, are you coming back? So that's a bit of encouragement, I appreciate it. So I see some of you quite regularly at the monastery, and some of you I don't see very often at all, and some I've probably never seen before. maybe just for this evening, I was going to give a talk, introduction to meta-meditation. We just did some the chanting from the suttas on that topic, but I'll sort of put it into sort of practical terms. And then we'll have a nice guided meditation, and afterwards Rachel's asked me to give a talk on mental health. So that'll be coming up. That's later on. So, we can start out. I've got some notes, so I don't just ramble endlessly. I've got to work on my impromptu talks, but I'll keep a bit of paper handy for the time being. So meta-meditation. Meta is a state of mind of loving-kindness, of well-wishing others, goodwill to others, to yourself as well, to ultimately to all beings, all conscious beings. And this is a quality we can cultivate. It's good to know what this is actually for, the meta-meditation. You might think, well, you know, meta's really good, so why wouldn't you do it? But it also has another function, which is allowing us to overcome some of the less pleasant states of mind, like anger and ill will and irritability and sometimes things like fear and anxiety. You can still work with these sort of states of mind. The Buddha talked about, in one place, about the best thing to overcome a state of mind that you don't want is to cultivate its opposite. So metta is the opposite of all of those things. Today we'll learn a little bit about making more of it, increasing the wattage of your metta practice. I also like I had this quote that came to mind when I was thinking about what I was going to talk about. The Buddha was talking about getting angry with people. He said it's like throwing hot coals. You might hurt the other person, but you'll certainly hurt yourself. And yeah, it's great. No, so if you with a bit of practice, and this is both in meditation and also in daily life, you start recognizing this emotion, this state of mind, and you enjoy it. You make more of it. You've got that resource there. So the next time someone cuts in front of you in traffic, or what do? They do all sorts of things. Well, metta allows you to let go of those sort of things. So, you recognise it. You recognise the metta, the goodwill, and delight in it. I'm sure we've all given plenty of contemplation to the state of world affairs these days. People invading here, people invading there, people saying silly things, and you wonder what's gonna come to the world. And I like the saying I've heard before, which is think global, act local. I think that your own heart and mind in the present moment is about as local as it gets. That's what we're going to try and cultivate today in our guided meditation, which is coming up later. More on that later. Once you recognise this feeling of goodwill to others, to all people, we did mention at the beginning that we welcome all creeds, all religions, all that sort of thing, and they all come under the auspices of this this practice. So you can you can actually, it's actually surprising how much you can change just by working with your own mind. Yeah, I know in the we've got an ablution block at the monastery, which is a shared monastery. We've got six showers, and we've got about 35 or something residents in the monastery. So I'd always come to the shower cubicle, and someone had put the soap in such a way that it blocks the thing at the bottom, and then it soaks up the water, and I'm like, oh, we're wasting all this soap. So I started, whenever I have a shower, when I finish having a shower, I'd put that bar of soap, just angle it, just so the water would drain out and the soap wouldn't get soggy and we could use a bit more of it. Not that we don't get enough soap at the monastery, but we do get plenty, don't worry, we have so much soap, so you don't have to buy lots and lots of soap. But I thought when I was doing this, I thought, maybe the next person will notice, but then, by the time five people go to a shower, no one will care anymore. But then I come back the next day, and the soap's been arranged in such a way that it doesn't sit there in a pool of water. So it was really nice. You see, it's just these very small acts can spread throughout the community. We've got a smaller community there, but also the world at large. I think when monks go out, sometimes we have to go out shopping and that sort of thing. There are things to do, business to take care of, health care to take care of, go get a Centrelink, all that sort of stuff. And I think people see us as they recognise that we've actually done a bit to cultivate our mind over the years. First, just a bit about the way the practice of meditation, formal meditation, sitting in a chair or sitting on a cushion and meditating, how that relates to wandering about in the world at large. So cultivating metta in meditation. There are a few different ways to do this. I know Ajahn Brahm likes to do a bit of cat contemplation. That seems to work well for him. I know on his retreats he often has some stuffed toys and stuff, and just enough to get that feeling of happiness, of joy, of goodwill, and allow it to sort of grow, and as it grows to sort of radiate outwards. That's sort of the imagery that you get when you read the suttas. There's something that radiates out from you, and actually, there's a number of ways of developing the metta, but also developing metta towards something cute and cuddly is somewhat a way to go. Some people like to use mantra, so that's very, very common. And there was a book by probably the only lengthy work on metta that I've seen was Sharon Salzberg's Loving Kindness. So that goes through loving kindness meditation, also compassion, altruistic joy, and equanimity that are found in the suttas. But she works on a principle of just repeating some words again and again. So may Rachel be happy, may she be well, may she be free from suffering. And again, it doesn't really matter. It's just about whatever works to bring forth this this feeling of joy and the hope that other people can share in that joy. Another one that's common is just to try and start with yourself, and then visualize just spreading it outwards to different groups. In the suttas, it's often to the north, to the south, the east, to the west, or it might be to Armidale, to Gosnells, to Kelscott, to Serpentine, or with different groups of any sort of background. So may all Muslims be well, may all Jewish people be well, may all Christians be well, may all Buddhists be well, may we all be well. And you've got that way of just building it up and letting it spread. So does anyone have any questions on metta? Does that sort of sound cool? Is that something we want to do? I don't know how long I've been talking for. that's pretty much what I had written down. And I think, we'll be able to just sit down and usually when I do my guided meditations, I tend to make it up as I go along. Is kind of one way of putting it. I know it's actually quite common. I don't try and structure them too much, but we'll try and focus a bit on generating love and kindness for the half an hour. And
I have a question.
Oh, good.
So out of the options you've just given us, what was it? Cat's contemplation.
Oh, okay, yeah.
A mantra or something else?
I was talking about, starting with visualization, basically. Okay. Could be a cat. Could be like grandma or as you remember her or anything that brings up that space,
so
that state of mind.
Which do you find most useful?
For me?
Yeah.
Oh, for me. Okay. Well, I don't do a lot of formal meditation on metta. What I use metta for is to empower other kinds of meditation. So generally, I'm in a follow Ajahn Brahm's teachings on Anapanasati, which is breath meditation. But at the same time, he tells a story of once when he mixed metta and breath meditation, it had wonderful results.
Mm-hmm.
So I find it's something that it's a quality of mind that you cultivate throughout the day, and then when you sit down to meditate, you have that loving kindness towards the present moment, to the place you are, the people you're with, and you have metta towards the breath. It's like, the breath is a bit rough at the moment. It's it's not that easy to watch, but you can say welcome to the welcome breath. Take it easy, breath. Be well. And today, it was interesting. We'll talk about mental health later on. What I found today was just had a bit of anxiety come up, and it's quite normal for people doing public speaking, but I just decided to sit down and just do some and just cultivate metta. With nothing more than just this is the state of mind I want to cultivate. I didn't really use any specific mantra or any sort of object, but just to bring in that feeling that I just develop in day-to-day life.
Yeah. And it's a feeling that we're working toward.
Essentially, yeah. There was this great saying, was it? Love is a much prostituted word, or something like that. So, it's a kind of love, but apart from sort of sensual love or love of mushy peas or that sort of thing. No, it's a specific kind of love. What it comes down to is that you want people to be happy, and you want them not to suffer, and you can extend that to all beings. And it is a feeling, essentially. So a feeling, an emotion, a kind of emotion, something you can perceive without thought. And it's lovely. It makes you feel really happy, and nice.
So the cat and the mantra are just a way of evoking the feeling.
Even in our rather extensive library at Bodhinyana, there's not that much on loving kindness. Sharon Salzberg's is probably the work that goes into the most details. We had some photocopies of Maha Chat Chai from Thailand, who's Ajahn Sujato's teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's where Ajahn Sujato got his instructions on meditation. But like I say, it's just a photocopy of a printout somewhere. So you won't find it down at the Armdale Kelmscott Library.
I have a question.
Yeah.
You said throughout the day you cultivate feelings of loving kindness before you meditate that night. Do you have a step program how you cultivate it, or
throughout the day?
Like when you said cultivating loving kindness, you sort of start off saying, "I love somebody," or "I feel this," or have you got a step program that you do it?
And that's very much. That's very, very much what a lot of metta teachers will teach us, that you start with yourself and then you go to so we'll take Sharon Salzberg for an example. She starts with yourself, and then to go to a person that you have a lot of affection for, mm-hmm. and then to a neutral person, mm-hmm. and then to a difficult person, and then to spread it out to everyone and to all beings as to ourselves.
Okay.
That's a much more structured way to do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You start with yourself first.
That's, yeah. Well, Ajahn Brahm kind of takes it the other way. He says that you're the person that you had the most difficulty getting better to. Like, traditionally, people would say, yeah, it's the the difficult person, it's the the Putins of the world. May Putin be happy, it's fine. sometimes we have the most trouble just being kind to ourselves. Yeah. But for me, it's more of an organic thing, and it's I like that. I have so many opportunities during the day just to do something kind for someone. Whether it's the soap in the bathroom or just letting people go around me at the table because I'm a bit slow. And when we're taking our meal, we eat our meal out of a bowl. So we go around the buffet, and people have brought lots of food and stuff. And I'm usually there just making a peanut butter sandwich. Oh, go on. So it's those little things throughout the day that I find works best for me, and reflecting on that as well to say, these are the things that I've done during the day that have brought people happiness and in some small way.
Thank you.
Cool. No. Good. Anyway, so I found it very, very effective using something I just tried today, just working with anxiety and using metta with that. Metta to sort of calm it down in the present moment. I mean, you never know what's going to happen in the future. You can't sort of say, oh, may I be really, 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 collected, calm and collected when I give the talk tonight. You can't do that. You have to deal with it in the present moment, what's arising now. It did work quite well, actually. It sort of makes me consider, how close those feelings of anxiety or fear, how close they are to anger as well. Because anger is the thing we sort of talk about. But there's all these, there's a whole spectrum of emotions and mental states that relate to one another. So you can take the suttas and you can see the various states of mind that the Buddha praised, and the various states of mind that you need to let go of. But then there's 2,500 years of language, the change in terms, and the way we talk about different states of mind. So it's good. It's a good contemplation just to see how one kind of as Buddha, the Buddha used a simile saying that as a skilled carpenter would knock out a coarse peg with a finer peg. So you just imagine that. Use the metta to tap out that feeling of irritability or fear or anxiety, doubt, or whatever's going in your mind on a day to day basis. Hello.
When you use metta in that way, would you say, for example, you have anxiety?
Mm.
Would you sort of like direct loving kindness towards the feeling of anxiety?
Letting it be. You can almost have a conversation with your feelings. You can say, "Ah, there's their anxiety. It's okay. I'm not gonna try and make you go away, because that's just more. That actually is a kind of ill will in itself in a very subtle form. So,
putting pressure on it.
You need to be kind to your mind, because it'll throw up all sorts of stuff during the day, days and nights. We'll see how it goes. We might even touch upon that during the guided meditation. Mm-hmm. See what comes up in the heart. Yeah, we're talking about the heart and mind in English, but in the Buddhist sense, it's usually just the citta, the same thing, the feelings and thoughts taken together. They talk about the term, what is it, metta bhavana, which is the development of metta, the cultivation, like Yeah. Oh, probably enough similes now. Anyway, but yeah, sort of like the garden of the mind, you know. Yeah. Water the flowers and not the weeds. So it's good. Well, can you spare me for 1 minute? I'm just gonna
go
to the bathroom break.
I'm sorry. And so one thing that I do with metta and anxiety is if I've got the feeling of anxiety, I'll actually send metta to it. So if I'm frustrated by the computer, I will send metta to it. So that's what I do step by step during the day. So just to be able to for Venerable, really, my sense of the soap is he's sending loving kindness from the soap. I mean, he's caring about the plug hole and the soap and the environment, but so whatever is bothering you, you could just send loving kindness to it, yeah, as a feeling, or you could do it as a word. May you be happy, soap. May you be happy, computer. So that's what I would do during the day. And sometimes it's just a feeling, and sometimes it's the words. That's why I was asking about which is most useful. So once you actually know the feeling, then it's easier to access it, and then I send it to all sorts of weird things, including the horrible drivers in front of me. Whenever I feel that I'm being my emotions are being disrupted by something, then I'll just go to the loving kindness and send it to anything in advance or at the time, or if I'm harbouring something, I send it to whatever was bothering me earlier. So it's all.
Can you send it to pain?
Definitely, yes.
Oh, well.
I just took over. So
good, thank you. Why not? We've had lead. We'll test theatre sports.
Yeah, that's good. I did alright.
Good.
That's good.
Yeah, so, that's good, I think. That's probably enough to talk about. Now we'll sit and relax.
Dim the lights.
Okay, that's good. I can still see the clock with my glasses on. I took my glasses off last time. I can't see what time it is.
If you go for too long, I'll whisper to you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, good. Is everyone comfortable? Okay. I make myself comfortable as well. I need to go to the bathroom. Cool. So I'll just start by relaxing. You can rest and relax. That's always the best approach, no matter what kind of meditation you're doing. So, just to start with, take it easy. Just relax and let your awareness come into the present moment, into your body here and now, space around you. Just relax for a few minutes. Any discomfort in the body, the way you're sitting, your clothing, if you got an itch. Now it's the time just to be conscious of the body. Give it some kindness. Have a sneeze. And just relax. The time to regenerate some of the energy we've spent throughout the day. Let some of that energy just well up in the heart, in the center of your chest. Just a warm, relaxed energy. Feeling that metta in the chest. Just watch your pulse rate drops down and slows. The breathing gets more regular. Feel the relaxation spreading into your tummy, into your limbs. It's just a feeling of relaxation. It's the gift to give to your body, to rest. There's so much for you all day. you might find some of that metta coming into the mind and body already. Maybe a little bit, maybe a lot. And you can say, yeah, more of this, thanks. For me, for the other people in the room. May they be relaxed. May they rest. May they be at ease. Spread a bit of metta to all those people that organised this tonight, gave the opportunity to come and chill and relax, all the good people to come along to do the same. So nice to have a group like this just to relax with, let down your guard. That feeling, relaxation and rest. Let it pass out through your skin. Spread out into the space around you. just content. Happy to be here. Feeling of well-being spread through all the little blood vessels in your body, spread to every little fingertip, just with that warmth, that happiness through the body and outwards to people around you as well. mind and body of metta, just allow it to grow gradually, second by second, minute by minute. And so on. Start to feel a bit tense or agitated, restless. That's fine. No worries. Slowly, slowly. That feeling of kindness grows. Okay, so we're coming close to the end of the meditation. I'd like to thank you all for your kindness. I think everyone's got a little bit of a glow. Well done. And just take a short spell just to enjoy how it feels. 30 minutes of meditation. Given my experiences, I'm kind of really chilled out right now. Okay, good. So, anyway, I've spoken about this on a number of occasions. I've never gone into a lot of depth. I think Rachel was interested in getting me to come and just have a bit of a chat about mental health. So, so I thought I might start and spend a bit of time talking about my own experiences. Mm-hmm. And I've got some general information, and also maybe some spend a bit of time talking about how meditation can help with mental health, and specifically my own experiences. So I've been coming here for several years now. I think I've done this maybe half a dozen times, if that. And I usually we start when we've hit our fifth rains, I think. So that would have been back in 2013. So it's not been a regular thing doing this group for me. So yeah, I appreciate your patience with me as I learn how to teach, as it were. I'm not naturally a particularly gregarious person. I'm friendly, but I'm generally a little bit quiet. But some people can just talk and talk and talk. So anyway, so basically the experience I was going to talk about is my I had schizophrenia. So specifically chronic paranoid schizophrenia. It doesn't sound very good, does it? It sounds really atrocious. And I thought it's good to talk about these things, because there's many different outcomes from this and other mental illnesses as well. So I mean, I know monks with anxiety disorders, with depression, with all those sorts of things, and I think in general, these are all things that we can deal with over time. So I thought I'd start out and just have a quick description of schizophrenia, what it's all about. So, easiest thing to do is just go to the web. I found the Mayo Clinic. So I talk about the main symptoms of schizophrenia are delusions. So the sort of tinfoil hat thing, you know. I shouldn't say that. It's a bit pejorative. But, yeah, people with schizophrenia, they often have, in the acute, when they're suffering symptoms, they often have some really bizarre ideas, but they're very, very real to that person. So it's always good to remember that. They talk about here just Some people have it in their mind that someone loves them. Maybe some celebrity or something like that, or maybe the weatherman's trying to give them messages through the television. And these are all very, very strange things. But at the end of the day, it all boils down to the fact that the mind is very much dependent on the way the brain operates. So all of those neurons, the biochemistry, the genetics, environment, all of these things, for some reason, cause these strange ideas. Often with schizophrenia, people hear voices. Some people just, like myself, when I was suffering an acute episode, I hear the frogs talking to me, saying, big ears, big ears. Very, very off-putting. But some people have it really bad, and they might be walking down the street, and it's like speakers booming at them, you know. So really, it can be very terrifying. And the other major one is the disorganized speech as well. So the way they express the thoughts are in their mind. Actually, what they say here is it's about the thinking itself is disordered, which is why that when a person experiencing schizophrenic symptoms can actually be very hard to understand. And together, they produce this illness that they call schizophrenia. And schizophrenia is actually a bit like cancer. There's so many different types, and they all have different potential for outcomes. I know some people have... there's a famous mathematician, wasn't it? The Guy in a Beautiful Mind. The book was about him. Was it John Adams? Yeah, amazing mind. So he developed game theory, so the fundamentals of game theory. So a brilliant guy, but also was very obsessed by numerology for a while, and all of these weird things. People have difficulty with personal hygiene, all of these sorts of things. They may not enjoy food. There's all these are referred to as the negative symptoms, so the lack of effect, all those sort of things. So that generally, that's basically what schizophrenia is. It's a bunch of symptoms that come under the umbrella, and there's usually one way of treating it. Well, the main way of treating it is with medication. So we talk about the advent in the middle of last century of antipsychotics has meant that it's very much treatable, which is the good side of things. And people who have the insight and take their meds often do very, very well. So this is what I've had to do with the last 20 years. I was also going to say it's nothing to do with multiple personalities or anything like that. That's another disorder entirely, called dissociative identity disorder. But I can imagine there'd be a bit of confusion there, because if you're talking to yourself, or you're talking to these voices that may seem completely real to them, there might be some confusion there. So. And in fact, the Greek root for schizophrenia is split mind. So there you go. That's maybe where a bit of that complication come in. So what's it like to live with schizophrenia? And that's what I've probably got more insight on than most people. I'm not a healthcare worker. I'm not a counsellor or anything. But I've over the last 20 years, I've experienced some really interesting things. And I. We're talking about the causes of mental illness, and a lot of it comes down to genetics and biochemistry and that sort of thing. But to be honest, I was smoking quite a lot of dope when I was a teenager, and that's actually quite a high risk factor. So, yeah, very good to look after your brain chemistry, and especially when you're very young. However, I've been on medication since 1996. So over 20 years now. And I managed to do a degree in software engineering and work as a programmer for several years, quite successfully. Things have gone really well. I came across Buddhism in 2006, so that would have been about 10 years after I got medicated. And unfortunately, I was taking things I went a bit over the top, I have to say, and I was, even before I came to the monastery to stay, I've been there actually since 2006. Going a bit hard. I did have a psychotic episode, and I ended up across the road here in the Leshen unit. I was there for 2 months, so I actually had the experience of being on the psych ward. So that wasn't a bad thing. It wasn't a horrible situation. They feed you a lot. I think I counted about 7 meals each day just to keep you busy. But I did manage to get some caffeinated coffee eventually. Mum and Dad would take me for they're based in Mount Lloyd, but they used to come down to the hospital, and sometimes we'd go for a drive in the hills up to Araluen and just to get me out of there. So, but no, you know, please. Yeah.
Are you on the same medication?
No, I'm not. I started out in 96 with Melorol, so I was on that for 5 years. I was on risperidone for 5 years, and then when I had my episode back in 2006, they put me on clozapine, which is quite a heavy duty antipsychotic. Has some major side effects. I was going to get that bit, which is kind of interesting.
I know a lot of people with mental illness in my family, and they seem to only go for a small period, like play 5 years on one medication, and then they need to
try something else. Yeah, I've been on clozapine.
Doesn't work effectively.
Yeah, fortunately for me, I've been on clozapine for 10 years now, and
I've going quite well.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I'm just all right. I was doing all right, but then I was just.
Could be better, sort of thing.
No, I was just going for hardcore back in 2006 with the practice, you know, sleeping on the floor, and this is before I came to the monastery, and not really socialising and not really talking to a teacher about things. And it's important, especially with intensive practice, to be able to have someone to talk with. That's what especially if you're doing a 9-day retreat or something with Ajahn Brahm, he's there, you can talk to him, and he'll explain things and say, well, no, that's just your mind, it's not real. or you should do it this way, or you should back off a bit on certain kinds of practice. But it doesn't, it's okay.
Can I ask a question about this psychotic episode then?
Yeah.
Is it seen to have been attributed to the psychosis or the intensive meditation practice?
I wasn't even diagnosed with schizophrenia until that point. They referred to it just as psychosis at that stage. At that time, I'd just returned to Perth, and I didn't have a psych. I wasn't seeing a consultant psych, so I wasn't talking to the doctor. And if I'd actually gone back and, the doctor I had before, I was in Perth, and then I moved to Melbourne and came back. Dr. Rampono is my doctor in Perth. He was wonderful, but in the time that I'd been away, he had specialised in postnatal depression, so he couldn't take me as a patient anymore. And I was working, had a job that I didn't, it was all a bit inconvenient to sort out a consultant psych and sort that out. So I think if I'd had regular access to a consultant psych, it probably wouldn't have happened.
Self-medicating
or anything? I was being good. I was a Buddhist at this stage, but I was I was just getting risperidone from the GP. I wasn't even a GP that I particularly knew. It was just the nearest. I was pretty good. I have to admit, I wouldn't have smoked that, but may have taken something out of that. Once or twice. I won't go into that in too much detail, but once I became a Buddhist, I was, which is 2005, I stopped everything. I didn't drink or anything. I like coffee. I still like a double espresso. So that period there was in 2006 when I came to the monastery. It was a time of really a lot of enthusiasm, and I was really into Buddhism and that sort of thing, but obviously I've regressed a bit with my illness and my treatment of myself. So, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I've developed a very, very good adherence to medication. I mean, the last time I missed a dose was many years ago. So, and I've got to take a dose every night before bed. That knocks me out, which is a bit embarrassing because, you know, everyone expects us to get up at, like, Ashen Brahm at 4 in the morning and that sort of thing. So I get quite heavy sedation from it.
Would you be like a 10 o'clock sleeper in it?
Well, no, on the weekends, no, we have lunch at 10:30, there's not enough time. But often, yeah, by the end of the week I need to catch up a bit on my sleep.
Yeah, my husband just started a new meditation last night, till 10 o'clock this morning.
Yeah, yeah. It can be, like, especially with new medications as well, before you get tolerant to them.
Mm.
Yeah. The other side of things is with the clozapine, so it's good for treatment-resistant schizophrenia, but you need to get regular blood tests. Every 4 weeks I pop up here to the ME clinic and I'm actually go to the pathology up there, then go to the ME clinic and get my meds. But in 2014 I went to Sri Lanka. So I had to organise these blood tests in Sri Lanka. That was crazy. I mean, bouncing around on buses, you know, from the monastery, which is in a very remote part of Sri Lanka, to Kurunegala, which is like the nearest big city. And I swear, I felt there's much less problem of having problems with my blood than getting killed in Sri Lankan traffic. It was just madness, absolute madness. But I did it. Every appointment I did, I got on the bus with Lal, one of the attendants at the monastery there at Narayana, and bounced. In the morning, it's okay. You know, you get up early, maybe 5 or 6, you head out, and then maybe an hour into Kurunegala, get the blood test, have a bite to it, and then come back. But the way Sri Lankan traffic works is that the major arterial roads are mostly two-lane highways. And because of the public works, one of those lanes is always being dug up. So it's a good 3 hours on the way back. And that was interesting in terms of the anxiety that I was feeling. Because I found that although I'd get anxious, and by the time I'd left Kurunegala, I'd be anxious, and it'd be another 3 or 4 hours till I'd get back to my hut. And I found that it didn't really get into panic. It never really got into panic. So the medication was working to that extent. The anxiety plateaued, and by the time I got back to it was funny. The stress just seemed to leave me as I left the big city. You know, you get into the smaller cities, and then, like, Melsapura, I think, was the nearest one. I was trying to remember if Tahani was with us. We were talking about where exactly it is. That was Melsapura is the nearest town. Then we changed buses and you go into the more rural parts. And I'd calm down, and by the time I go back to the monastery, I'm like, oh, okay, I think I'm over it now. Get back to my hut, which is halfway up a mountain. So I'd walk up the mountain and go back to my hut. It's a very nice hut. And lay down and then relax. And that was the thing that I was going to come to, which is the positive side of all of this. What I really, and this only sort of occurred to me just over a month ago. I saw a new doctor. They generally rotate the doctors over to the med clinic with us with the clozapine patients. And I just happened to get this doctor. I think he was there in between the residents. Was it residents or registrars? I can't remember the name. And he was pretty experienced. He'd worked with all sorts of people, and we talked about refugees he'd worked with and prisons and all that sort of stuff, because I teach prison, teach meditation in prison. And he said the difference between me and his other patients was my ability to dissipate stress through meditation. So that was a really, really interesting insight, actually. First of all, I love the way I love the word dissipate. That's right. I love the word dissipate. It's like smoke, you know, on a windy day. It just passes away. Or another nice simile is, you know, like a cup of coffee in the morning. But you can't drink it straight away. You've got to let the heat dissipate until it's just right, and then you can enjoy your cup of coffee. But that's what it's like. I found today, just after the morning's work, so I was working quite busy helping out Ajahn Brahm with his schedules and that sort of thing. We had a committee report to get done and that sort of thing. You know about committee reports, Rachel?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was quite busy this morning. I had a little bit of anxiety after that. And after lunch, we have our lunch just after the work meeting, and then I go back to my hut. I found, even though the anxiety had come up and plateaued for a while, back at my hut, it was about 5 minutes. Just go back to my hut, lay down on my bed, did my usual things, just attention to the heart rate and the breathing, and relax. And about 5 minutes, so it was all completely gone. So it's wonderful. I mean, it's wonderful that you can, that this practice, you know, laid down by the Buddha so long ago to end suffering. That's what it's all about, right?
Mm.
And in this life, to end mental suffering completely, you know. So I found that it just works. I mean, on the one hand, you've got the insight and the mindfulness to remember to take your medication regularly and don't miss any doses. But at the same time, you can actually work with the states of mind that arise because of your brain chemistry, essentially. That was pretty much all I had to talk about. So I'm quite happy. I'm quite happy if anyone wants to ask a few questions. Yeah.
I've noticed my favorite was schizophrenia never work again.
That's not always the case. I was reading a it was just an article online. I don't know where I saw it, and they said it is actually a misnomer that people with schizophrenia don't find their way back into full time work. I think a lot of people worry about it, but I think
I've known 20 plus people with schizophrenia.
So are you?
I've known 20
plus
people
with
schizophrenia, and none of them have gone back to work.
Yeah, it can be difficult, for sure. For me, I was able to, after my initial diagnosis of psychosis, I was able to get a degree, and that took me 4 years. And then I don't know. It probably depends on the individual.
Yeah.
Maybe they weren't meditating. Well, maybe not.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit more? Just I know we've only got 2 minutes, but about meditation.
Yeah.
Because there's often this talk about people with mental health disorders shouldn't meditate.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, it's a good thing to contemplate. Actually, that. I think. If you know someone with a mental illness, be it schizophrenia or another illness, it's good to talk about it with your doctor and just say that you're interested in taking up the practice and what they recommend. And I'd recommend just starting it very, very slowly. Don't just jump into a 9-day retreat or do what I did, which was just house sit for my parents for 3 months and not barely leave the house except to walk my dog and do some shopping and sleep on the floor and all that sort of stuff. I think it's more the extremes you have to avoid, or at least know your limits as well. So to start out, I think if to do maybe 15 minutes of meditation each day is not going to tip anyone over the edge. I don't think. And also, if you find that it's exacerbating symptoms, then it's definitely something to talk to your doctor about. So, yeah.
Okay, good.
Mm.
Thank you.
No worries.
Okay.